Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. While Oregon is known for its timber industry, the history of non-logging forestry work in Oregon isn't well known. It's the history of Hodads and Pinyeros. And if those terms are unfamiliar to you, well, don't worry. I have someone here who is the perfect person to ask. My guest today is Justin Higginbottom. He's part of our award-winning news team here at JPR, and he's done a lot of work reporting on the history of forestry in Oregon. Welcome, Justin.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So how'd you come across this story?
Yeah, so I first became interested in this story due to a lawsuit filed in Jackson County by a forestry worker against a few contractors that he had worked for in the Rogue Valley. And this was, as you mentioned in your intro, he was a forestry worker working in non-timber-related things like fuels reduction. And officially, this is called labor-intensive forestry. So it's all those people out in the forest doing this type of work that isn't timber harvesting. And he is suing these companies because he claimed that they didn't offer proper safety training or equipment, and he was actually severely injured on the job. So he's suing for tens of millions of dollars. And in the complaint, actually, they talk about this type of work and how it's mostly filled by guest workers called Pinyeros at this point. And looking into this, I got more into the history of what this work looked like decades ago and came across the Hodads, which I was unfamiliar with. I'm sort of new to Oregon, but that was a very large worker cooperative that was doing a lot of this labor-intensive forestry before the guest worker program really kicked off.
Give me a little bit of a description of what this labor-intensive timber harvesting is.
Yeah, so that involves, tree planting at first, reforestation efforts, and now really it's shifted more into wildfire mitigation. So there's a lot of federal contracts and work on private land to do fuels reduction, which looks like clearing understory and doing prescribed burns and things like that.
Okay, so how far back does the history of Hodads in Oregon go?
So the Hodads started in the early 70s, and that was due to some new laws, especially the 1972 Oregon Forest Practices Act, which required the reforestation of these lands that were at that time clear-cut by logging companies. And so the federal government wanted to replant these lands. That's very labor intensive. You can't mechanize that, really. You have to just hike into the backcountry. It takes a lot of workers. And around that time, this was the early 70s, kind of, you know, countercultural spirit in America, a lot of back to landers and hippie types. They got together and decided this is some great, worthwhile work. And they started this very large worker cooperative that was run democratically. They decided, you know, how the contract was split among the crew members. I spoke to actually one of the co-founders, Jerry Rust. He's from Oregon, and he started this back in the early 70s.
What we had were a bunch of refugees from the East Coast in California swarming into Eugene and never worked a lick in their life. That was one of the joys I had, teaching untrained workers and watching them bend their backs and sweat and come out of there dirty and just as high as kite.
So the hippies became Hodads, but now the Hodads aren't around anymore.
Yeah. The Hodads eventually went out of business in the 90s. But until that point, it was really a pretty sustainable and, you know, good job for a lot of these workers. And actually, since those features I produced ran, I've been contacted by former Hodads that were tree planting at the time. And they were saying they were making a pretty good living wage. Like, they could make $100, $200 a day, maybe, depending on the contract, which was good back then. Of course, rent and things were a lot lower. But it was a decent job at the time. Not everyone were, you know, hippies and activists. There were just workers that wanted to work in the forest. But it was, importantly, it was run democratically. So this was a worker cooperative model, which was really interesting. And they were doing a lot of the tree planting at the time. They were getting millions of dollars in federal contracts. They had hundreds of workers organized into crews with their own kind of culture around these crews. There were kind of more activist, left-leaning crews like social democrats, and there was a Marxist crew. There was also an all-lesbian crew, Full Moon Rising, based out of Eugene. So it was a really interesting subculture that were doing this work in the forest.
Huh. So it sounds like these people gravitated to Oregon from all walks of life, all over the country. And where'd they live?
Well, they were based different places, but this type of work, a lot of it was based home base in Eugene, but they traveled all over Oregon and out of state too. They worked in different states, and that was until kind of the 90s when they dissolved, and that was for a number of reasons I can talk about. Kind of the first was they started running up against more competition with traditionally structured businesses. So those were contractors hiring workers and just paying them a wage, like a traditionally structured business, not a worker cooperative model. I spoke to an academic, Brenda Sarthy, out of the University of Washington, who wrote a book on the Pinneros, and she talks about how these contractors at the time in the 70s and early 80s were mostly relying on undocumented workers.
There's this transition that you see in the early to mid 1980s of largely white contractors starting to hire more Latino workers. Most of those workers would have been at that time probably undocumented. They're seen as compliant. Many of them don't complain about injuries on the job. There's no workers' comp worries, unfortunately.
And so that was one reason that they went out of business. They were just in competition with these contractors that could bid at a lower price, in theory, for these federal contracts. Another reason is these businesses, the contractors, actually lobbied against the worker cooperative model in Oregon. So they thought it was unfair, and to be honest, it was a little bit unfair that the workers in this cooperative didn't have to pay workers' compensation. So their costs were a lot lower. And once that changed and workers' compensation became necessary, their costs increased. And so it just became harder to get these contracts still. And then the third reason, after talking to some former HODADs and academics on this, for why they dissolved is just these workers, these hippies and activists just started drifting away. Just, as the 80s came, they went back to school, they started families. So there was a general drift away from this type of work. And by the mid-90s, they were over.
Oh, it sounds like the business model changed and their lives changed. My guest is Justin Higginbottom, a member of JPR's award-winning news team. We're talking about Justin's reporting on the history of non-logging forestry management in Oregon, from HODADs to the Pinneros. So who replaced the HODADs? What does this labor-intensive forestry industry look like now?
So it was replaced by contractors. It was replaced by these traditionally structured businesses that were competing against the HODADs. And right now, that's what the industry looks like. And what's interesting is that industry relies very heavily, almost exclusively, off of guest workers, people on H-2B work visas. So those are non-agricultural seasonal workers. So they'll come for a season, they'll work, they'll go back to, in this case, mostly Latin America and in Mexico primarily, and then they'll come back the next season to work. So right now, That's who's doing a lot of this work in the forest, which I found interesting because, it's not who you picture doing the work, and they're kind of hidden, in the backcountry, so you don't come across them very often. But that's who's doing the work now.
So these seasonal workers who are the immigrants coming across from Latin America, helping to mitigate all the challenges we have in our forest for wildfire and reforestation, who owns the contracts?
Well, that was another really interesting shift. So in 1986, actually, under Reagan, he passed the Immigration Reform and Control Act, and that legalized a lot of the migrants that were here undocumented. So at the time, a lot of they were farm workers originally, and then they kind of transitioned into forestry work, and then a lot of them at that time were undocumented. And then they were legalized, and they could actually start their own contracting businesses for forestry work.
Nice.
And Jackson County has really become a center of this in the entire nation. So just for some numbers, so Last year, 13,000 H-2B worker visas were accepted by the federal government, or requested rather, by businesses to the federal government. Out of that total number in the nation, over 3,000 of those came just from Jackson County. So by far, the greatest number were requested out of anywhere in the nation. I think the second was in Mississippi, which requested like 200 H-2B worker visas.
Let me ask you a question on that. So 13,000 H-2B visas. What does that mean? What is H-2B visa?
So the H-2B visa is the guest worker visa. So that's the forestry workers here. And this is just specifically labor-intensive forestry work H-2B visas. So this isn't the total H-2B visas in the entire nation. This is just those visas related to that type of work. So nationwide, that's 13,000. Mm-hmm. And Jackson County, like I mentioned, has become a center of that. And there's just in the Rogue Valley here, there's over 50 contractors right now that request these visas. And over 80% of those contractors are Hispanic-owned, according to federal data. And the reason for that is probably a kind of a critical mass where you have these former forestry workers who are able to start their own contracting businesses. They know the industry. And then they recruit, a lot of times it seems like kind of in an informal way. They'll hire family or friends. They'll have labor brokers in Mexico that hire people. And so that's how the industry has really become dominated, not only by guest workers, Paneros from Latin America doing the work, but those same types of people that own the contracting businesses themselves.
Okay, so just so that I'm clear, we went from the evolution of the HODADs, these are hippies, and, you know, doing the work, to contractors who hired these guest workers from Latin America, to the point where these guest workers who understood how to do this work began to form their own companies and had their own trusted networks, and now they dominate the industry. There are about 80% of the contractors are Hispanic-owned companies.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of federal dollars are going into this industry. It took me a while, but I calculated close to $900 million have gone to contractors just in the Rogue Valley in the last couple decades doing this type of work.
So and this that is part of our economy.
Yeah, certainly. And that doesn't include contracts for private land because that's not public data. So it's a lot of money.
Okay, but there are some concerns about the industry and how workers are treated.
Yeah, so in theory, the federal government awards these contracts off something called best value, which takes into account the cost of the work, but also other components like benefits to the community and experience and things like that. In practice, after talking to some experts on this topic, they said it's still generally, these contracts are still generally awarded to the lowest bidder. So these companies have an incentive to cut costs, do it as cheap as possible. And unfortunately, some of those corners that they cut can be the safety of their workers, like the lawsuit I mentioned in the beginning. Some of these, you know, these workers are using chainsaws. This is a very, it's a dangerous work. People get injured all the time. And without proper safety training, that can be an issue. There's also an incentive for the workers not to report or complain against the contractor because they want to be invited back. Yeah, so that's another issue. And actually, you know, in OSHA, so Oregon's OSHA, they've only in the last 7 years or so, they've only inspected really a handful of these contractors working in the forests. As I mentioned, there's 50 just in the Rogue Valley itself.
So how has the new Trump administration's policies impacted the industry?
So far, it hasn't. So this is, of course, national politics are changing very quickly. But last time Trump was in office, he actually increased the number of H-2B visas. There's been a lot of coverage about how his businesses and casinos rely off these types of workers too, H-2B, not forestry workers, of course, but other guest workers. So right now he's not going after those workers, and there shouldn't, but the funding, of course, that side might change.
So what's the future of this work look like?
Well, Jerry Rust, who we heard from in the beginning, he would like to see another worker cooperative model take root. He thinks there's space for the HODADs, but the regulatory environment has changed. So you have to offer workers compensation and things like that. So it's a lot harder nowadays to get off the ground.
Okay, well, unfortunately, we're out of time for this segment. Thanks a lot, Justin. I really appreciate your reporting.
Thank you.
My guest was JPR reporter Justin Higginbottom.